Good morning. This is Wendy Bauer reading to you today with from the Decatur Herald and Review. It's July 20th, 2020. And we'll begin on the front page with the article headlined, Two New Lieutenants. Couple brings passion for service to Decatur's Salvation Army. The Salvation Army is ready for some changes, and Lieutenants Canessa and Chanel DeBella are ready to lead them as part of the Decatur Salvation Army and the Decatur community. The husband and wife team were recently commissioned into the national agency, beginning their Decatur assignments on July 1st. We are fresh out of college for officer training, Chanel DeBella, 48, said, but we have a lot of experience. The Salvation Army headquarters assigned the family to Decatur, replacing Majors Greg and Carla Voller. The Vollers are now in Chicago for their appointment to the Salvation Army territorial headquarters. They served Decatur for more than 2 years. They know what the needs are and what the skills are, Canessa DeBella, 49, said about his supervisors. They tried to fit people where they are needed. The family dynamics are taken into consideration. The DeBellas bring with them three school-age children. Chanel DeBella has worked for the Salvation Army for 13 years. She said she was called into full-time ministry after she began attending the church 6 years ago. Chanel DeBella is not new to Central Illinois. One of her previous careers was as a reporter for WCIA-TV in Champaign 20 years ago. She often was sent to Decatur for assignments, including the Firestone tire recall story, the blizzard of 1999, and the marches conducted by Jesse Jackson. That job for me, after a while, I didn't feel fulfilled, she said. It's a lot of doom and gloom stories. I didn't feel I was helping people. Chanel DeBella said God was calling her to a service-focused career. She began with social service jobs. One of her first responsibilities was helping survivors after Hurricane Katrina hit the southern coast in 2005. That's where I felt my calling, she said. It was giving holistic care, spiritual, physical, emotional care. The couple have been married for more than 20 years. Although his career in information technology was in Chicago, Canessa DeBella had several opportunities to travel with his wife to Central Illinois. A native of Ethiopia, he came to the United States in 1989, received his bachelor's degree in IT systems, and after serving with several social service agencies, he began a full-time ministry with the Salvation Army in 2006. On their first day at the Decatur Agency, the couple was greeted with a shattered window in the entrance of the Salvation Army building. I was a little surprised, Canessa DeBella said. I wasn't upset or mad. I just thought, so what do we do next? The DeBellas' last position was in Chicago. They said vandalism is more common in the larger city. I was sad, but I was also concerned, Chanel DeBella said. Their worries were focused on the clients housed in the shelter. The Salvation Army provides several services, including a food pantry, homeless assistance, as well as a homeless shelter for men. The DeBellas said they are impressed with their co-workers' abilities and admiration of Decatur. That is just infectious, Chanel DeBella said. That makes us want to know more about this community and get more involved. Kyle Karsten, Development Director for the Salvation Army, said he sees a similar passion in the DeBellas. To see their energy and their excitement, it's fun to introduce them to the community, he said. They are so excited to come into this community and start serving the people who need our help. The new officers will bring their social service experiences to Decatur, a resource Karsten is happy to use, to roll up their sleeves and see how they can support it, and maybe see how they can do it better, he said. That's exciting to me. Karsten appreciates the work the Volers were able to contribute to the community, but the Dumelas are excited, he said. It's going to breathe the next new energy into this program. The couple want to study the needs of Decatur and how they can work with other organizations and churches to determine how we can collaborate and meet the needs of our community, Knessa Dabela said. We don't want to replicate things that are already happening. While social restrictions may hinder face-to-face meetings, the Dabelas are encouraging emails and phone calls, and people are still stopping by with their masks on, Chanel Dabela said, and we have church on Sundays. Plans for the future include organizing youth programs again, as well as a women's group. The Dabelas said they left lucrative careers to enter the ministry. When God calls you to service, you jump on, Knessa Dabela said, and this is in our hearts and our passion, to see our fellow man taken care of holistically. We ask the community to come alongside us, Knessa Dabela said. Let us know where we can be of help or where they can help us. And this article is part of the Together Decatur series. If you know a person or a story that exemplifies the best of Decatur, contact Donette Beckett at 217-421-6983. And continuing on the front page, the national response to COVID-19, additional aid talks on tap, governments reassessing responses to coronavirus. Top Republicans in Congress are expecting to meet Monday with President Donald Trump on the next COVID-19 aid package as the administration panned more virus testing money and interjected other priorities that could complicate quick passage. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was prepared to roll out the $1 trillion package in a matter of days, but divisions between the Senate GOP majority and the White House posed fresh challenges. Congress was returning to session this week as the coronavirus crisis many had hoped would have improved by now only worsened, and just as earlier federal emergency relief was expiring. Trump insisted again Sunday that the virus would disappear. But the president's view did not at all match projections from the leading health professionals straining to halt the U.S.'s alarming caseloads and death toll. McConnell and House GOP leader Kevin McCarthy were set to meet with Trump and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin to fine-tune the legislation, Acting Chief of Staff Mark Meadows said on Fox News. The package from McConnell had been quietly crafted behind closed doors for weeks and was expected to include $75 billion to help schools reopen, reduced unemployment benefits alongside a fresh round of direct $1,200 cash payments to Americans, and a sweeping 5-year liability shield against coronavirus lawsuits. But as the White House weighed in, the administration was panning some $25 billion in proposed new funds for testing and tracing, said one Republican familiar with the discussions. The administration's objections were first reported by the Washington Post. Trump was also reviving his push for a payroll tax break, which was being seriously considered, said another Republican. Both spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss the private talks. Meanwhile, signs of governments reassessing their coronavirus response were scattered around the world Sunday, with the mayor of Los Angeles saying the city was reopened too quickly, Ohio's governor warning his state is going the wrong way, Hong Kong issuing tougher new rules on wearing face masks, and Spain closing overcrowded beaches. Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti said Los Angeles was on the brink of new widespread stay-at-home orders as Los Angeles County continued to see the state's largest increase in confirmed coronavirus cases. California reported on Saturday its fourth highest daily total of newly confirmed coronavirus cases, with more than 9,000. Appearing on CNN Sunday, Garcetti was asked about a Los Angeles Times editorial that criticized the rapid reopening of California, which was followed by a spike in new COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations. "I do agree those things happened too quickly," Garcetti said, adding that the decisions were made at the state and county levels, not by city officials. But he also said people in general had become less vigilant about taking precautions to avoid transmission. "It's not just what's open and closed," he said. "It's also about what we do individually." Infections have been soaring in the U.S. states, including California, Florida, Texas, and Arizona, with many blaming a haphazard partisan approach to lifting lockdowns, as well as the resistance of some Americans to wearing masks. In Florida, where health officials reported nearly 12,500 new infections and nearly 90 additional deaths on Sunday, U.S. Senator Marco Rubio called for consistent, nonpartisan messaging. "We've seen a lot of these things turned into sort of a partisan fight or a political statement," he told South Florida television station CBS4 on Sunday. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, like Rubio a Republican, said he would not rule out a statewide mandate on wearing masks as infections in his state grew. He has already issued such orders in 19 counties, accounting for nearly 60% of the state's population. "We are going the wrong way. We are at a crucial time," DeWine said on NBC's Meet the Press. And also on the front page, further national response to the coronavirus. Clock ticking on boost. Stress rises for jobless as extra $600 benefit nears end. A major source of income for roughly 30 million unemployed people is set to end, threatening their ability to meet rent and pay bills and potentially undercutting the fragile economic recovery. In March, Congress approved an extra $600 in weekly unemployment benefits as part of its $2 trillion relief package aimed at offsetting the impact of the coronavirus pandemic. That additional payment expires next week, unless it gets renewed. For Henry Montalvo, who was furloughed from his job as a banquet server and bartender in Phoenix in mid-March, the expiration of the $600 will cut his unemployment benefits by two-thirds. He uses the money to help support his three children and pregnant girlfriend. "Now that it's about to end, that grim and uneasy feeling is coming back really fast," Montalvo said. The unemployment insurance program has emerged as a crucial source of support at a time when the jobless rate is at Depression-era levels. In May, unemployment benefits made up 6% of all U.S. income, ahead of even Social Security, and up dramatically from February when it amounted to just 0.1% of national income. The increase has likely done as much or more to limit widespread hardship like food insecurity, homelessness, utility cutoffs, and mental health challenges, as any provision Congress has enacted in response to the pandemic and recession, said Indivar Dupta Gupta, co-executive director of the Georgetown Center on Poverty and Inequality. Congress enacted the extra payment for just 4 months, largely on the assumption that the viral outbreak would subside by late July and the economy would be well on the way to recovery. But confirmed case counts are rising in 40 states, and 22 states are either reversing or pausing their reopening efforts, threatening to slow rehiring. The number of people seeking weekly jobless aid has leveled off at roughly 1.3 million, after falling steadily in May and early June. Eliminating the extra payment would cut benefits for most recipients by 50 to 75%, depending on the size of each state's unemployment benefit, which varies based on a worker's prior income. Arizona's maximum payment of $240 is near the low end, while Massachusetts is among the most generous, with a weekly maximum payment of more than $800. Other measures intended to shore up business and household finances, such as one-time payments of $1,200 and a small business lending program, have also largely run their course. That could sharpen the impact of the pandemic-induced job losses, which have pushed the unemployment rate to 11.1%. Another government rescue package is in the works, and some sort of extended extra benefit is possible. Trump administration officials have expressed support for more aid, and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, has signaled a willingness to compromise. House Democrats passed legislation last month to extend the benefits to the end of January. They need to buy food. These are necessities. And when you use that money for necessities, they inject demand into the economy and create jobs, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said on Thursday. The extra $600 was initially agreed upon because, for an average worker, it made their jobless benefits equal to their previous pay. Most states' antiquated unemployment systems weren't able to calculate a percentage increase in benefits that would have accomplished that for laid-off workers at different income levels. Layoffs, since the pandemic struck, have been heavily concentrated in low-paying service industries, such as restaurants, bars, and retailers, where workers make below-average incomes. That has made the $600 a boon to such workers, who are disproportionately Black and Hispanic. The Congressional Budget Office estimates that 42% of the people getting the extra $600 are non-white. Many businesses say they have had trouble enticing their former employees to return to their jobs, given the generous unemployment benefit. Yet government data shows that in May, there were 4 unemployed people for every available job, a sign that the biggest challenge facing the economy is a lack of jobs, not workers. Megan Fredette had 3 jobs as a freelance writer before the pandemic and lost 2 of them. She is now working just one day a week. As it is, she makes less from benefits than she did from work. If the $600 expires, her benefits will drop to just $200 a week in state aid, not enough to pay rent in New York City, where she lives. Fredette, almost 35, says she has trouble sleeping because of the stress and anxiety. "It's not like I don't want to work. I had 3 jobs," she said. "In normal times, if I was experiencing this kind of financial wreck, I would get a job at Whole Foods or a restaurant, but they are barely open and can barely bring back the staff they have." Many state limits on evictions will expire by this fall, raising the risk that more unemployed could become homeless. Congress suspended evictions from public housing in late March, but only until July 25th. The COVID-19 Eviction Defense Project estimates that 19 million to 23 million people could be thrown out of their apartments by the end of September. And next, Macon County Board. County sets special meeting. Committee seeking update on lagging property tax collection. Macon County Board Finance Committee will hold a special meeting Monday to address concerns about property tax collection lagging way behind last year. During a July 13th meeting, Macon County Treasurer Ed Yoder told committee members his office had distributed $45,588,550 to local taxing bodies on July 9th from the first installment of property taxes that were due June 15th. The first distribution last year totaled $83,347,635. Responding to questions from committee members last week, Yoder indicated part of the shortfall was the result of an earlier distribution to taxing bodies, and that the amount would have been much higher had he waited an additional 2 weeks like he did last year. He indicated that he acted earlier because of concerns raised from taxing bodies about the timing of last year's first distribution. However, Yoder was unable to provide the committee the amount that had been collected to date and expressed some concerns that staffing levels in his office were preventing some payments from being deposited within the 2 business days mandated by statutes. It was noted during the meeting that Yoder's budget included a line item to pay for temporary help, and there was some mention of using available staff members from other departments to help speed up the process if needed. "We expected, because of the pandemic, we would be short, but nothing like that," County Board Chairman Kevin Greenfield said Friday. He said knowing how much has been collected and getting a firm understanding of the likelihood of delinquencies are important as the board begins its budgeting process. The information is equally as important to other taxing bodies who are counting on the distributions to meet their budgeted expenses. The committee's special meeting is set for 5:15 p.m. Monday, July 20th, in the 5th floor meeting room. At that meeting, Greenfield said it is expected that Yoder will provide the committee with the latest collection amount and review the collection and distribution process. And moving to the local and state page, Herald and Review updating print schedule. "We report daily on the way businesses are adapting and reinventing themselves to succeed in this fluid environment. One of the takeaways from our reporting is that businesses need to be future ready, and that includes the Herald and Review. During the past months, the Herald and Review has seen huge audience growth in digital readership as our journalists have covered COVID-19 and the Decatur community's response to heightened national conversations about race. Overall, digital-only subscriptions have increased by 93% over the prior year, and herald-review.com, the Herald and Review app, and social channels continue to expand with videos, photo galleries, podcasts, and updated stories and breaking news. Changing readership dynamics trend toward multimedia and digital news consumption. To provide our readers and future readers news where they want it and how they want it, the Herald and Review will transition to a 5-day, Tuesday through Saturday, print schedule starting August 17th. The change in print frequency helps align the Herald and Review with reader habits, which increasingly are digital," said Barry Winterland, general manager of the Central Illinois Newspaper Group for Lee Enterprises. "Our mission is to provide outstanding local journalism. This print transformation secures our future in our role as watchdog and our efforts to keep readers informed. Fewer print days does not mean less journalism." A greatly enhanced weekend edition will be available on Saturday at the start of the weekend. This Saturday/Sunday paper will feature more content, plus inserts and coupons that readers are accustomed to getting in the Sunday edition. Additional details about other features will be announced next month. The Sunday and Monday newspapers will be available in e-edition format, The e-edition is an exact replica of the newspaper and, like all Herald and Review digital content, is already available to members and subscribers. We have absolutely no plans to slow down chasing news, said Central Illinois editor Chris Coates, adding that the Herald and Review was recognized in May in the Local Media Digital Innovation Awards, one of numerous honors received for digital journalism over the years. This announcement does not change that. For those who want to support local journalism, please go to herald-review.com/members. The next, violent weekend in Peoria. Authorities report multiple people firing guns, 17 shot. Authorities on Sunday said there were multiple people firing weapons into a crowd of nearly 200 gathered near the riverfront, leaving 13 people suffering from gunshot wounds. 7 women and 6 men, all adults, were shot. None of their injuries were considered life-threatening, according to a statement from Peoria Police. Investigators said they determined there was more than one shooter. No arrests had been made as of Sunday afternoon. This incident occurred as a result of a dispute among groups of people gathered at the riverfront, police said. The incident came as part of a brutal weekend that saw 17 people shot, with one death between Friday night and Sunday morning. Officers were called to the area of Water and Hamilton Streets about 4:45 a.m. Sunday for reports of a large fight among the nearly 200 people gathered there. It wasn't immediately clear why they had gathered or what led to the fight, officials said. Officers located 2 injured people at the scene. A man had been shot in the neck, and a woman had been shot in the back. Each was taken by ambulance to an area hospital in serious condition, according to the statement. 11 other people suffering from gunshot wounds to their extremities were taken to various local hospitals by car, police said. In a separate incident, a man was shot in the face late Saturday night just south of downtown Peoria. He was driven to a hospital and a crime scene was developed in the 700 block of Hightower Street. The man's injuries were not considered life-threatening. The shootings came after 2 separate incidents early Saturday that left 1 person dead and 2 others injured. In the first incident, 40-year-old Caleb McCracken was killed when he and another man were shot at about 1:30 a.m. Saturday in the 2500 block of West Siebold Street. Then, about 3 hours later, the ShotSpotter gunfire detection system reported activity in the 2100 block of Northampton Court, according to police. There, they found a vehicle had crashed into a porch in the 2100 block of North Street, and a man had been taken by a personal vehicle to the hospital with a gunshot wound. He was last listed in serious condition. Police believe 2 people had been shooting at each other. No arrests have been made in either of the incidents that occurred on Saturday. Anyone with information about any of the incidents can call Peoria Police at 309-673-4521. Those wishing to remain anonymous may call Crime Stoppers at 309-673-9000. And this has been Wendy Bauer reading from the Decatur Herald and Review on July 20th, 2020. This ends our first half hour. We will take a short break now and return with the second half hour shortly. Please stay tuned.